From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Have you sat down to start your federal taxes yet? Got questions? My friends, you have come to the right place. Two people from the Internal Revenue Service are here to answer your questions.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
David Tucker and Richard Panik are with the Internal Revenue Service. They are here to answer your questions. If something is befuddling you, call us, 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. They'll do their best to answer your question. It's 800-289-5869. You can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Tell us a little bit about yourselves. David, how did you get involved with the IRS? Why did you choose that as a career?
Well, I've been involved in public relations for a number of years, having worked in town both with Seattle Repertory Theater and also having been in the military as well, where I worked in communications. And so the IRS, you know, it's an organization that I believe in the function of what we're doing, and I believe that having been, especially in the military, in places where infrastructure and all those things that we take for granted as sometimes as Americans aren't available, like Iraq or Haiti or Kosovo, you know, you really appreciate all the things that our government and our country does for us as citizens, and that takes the revenue of the taxpayer and the IRS to make sure that that happens.
Richard Panik, what do you do at the IRS, and how did you embark upon that?
Well, I have the same position that David does. We work with media relations. That's our job title. I've been with the service for soon to be 23 years. And I began my career with the IRS on the other end of the toll-free line that people can call. And I answered tax law questions for the better part of a decade. And then I moved into other areas, always dealing with outreach and communication. Much as David has just said, we provide a valuable service, providing information to taxpayers so they can fulfill their obligation and so that we can enjoy the benefits of the revenue the government needs that protects us and keeps us safe.
Let's get right to it. Liz wrote to us to ask, is it possible to declare an unrelated adult, opposite sex partner, as a dependent? She writes, I have income from wages and interest only, and my partner, male, unmarried, stays at home. Neither of us collects any sort of benefits. He's not disabled. He's not filed an individual tax form for years. He doesn't meet the income thresholds. We can document our domestic partnership over the last 15 plus years. I've never declared him as a dependent before. Is it possible for Liz to declare this person living with her as a dependent?
Well, that's a lot of information, and almost everything that we need to give a specific answer is there. So what I have to say is it's possible. What Liz would want to do is go to our website, irs.gov, and type in publication 501 in the search box and read the rules about what it takes to qualify someone as a dependent. In this case, you'd be looking at the rules for a qualifying relative. Now, remember, in tax law, terms mean things that don't always mean the same
in
real life.
Even if they're not married, it could be construed as a relative for the purposes
correct.
Of the IRS.
So it is possible that this person could be eligible to be claimed as a dependent. But they have to take a look at those rules, and Publication 501 explains them all.
Let's go to David. He's listening to us today in the Green Lake neighborhood. David, thanks for calling us. What's your question for the IRS?
At the end of last year, I was appointed trustee for a simple trust for my brother. And since it was established on the 28th of December, the only income it shows is 34 cents of interest. Do I still need to file the Form 1041?
A simple trust with 34 cents of interest on it. Is that going to be something he has to file for?
Well, I'd say it's always safe to, you know, regardless of the amount of the income, it's always safe to file in order to, that way you're always complying with the letter of the law. And, you know, we could say whether it's 34 cents or $34,000, you want to stay within the guidelines of what's required. And so I would recommend if that's the case, do the due diligence and abide by the law.
David, thanks for your call. How picky do you guys get? If someone's like 34 cents off, are you going to go after them?
Well, we really don't speak to what triggers audit or things of that nature. But what I would say is that we do say that it's always good to declare income that you that is taxable. And so in that situation, or not this that particular situation, but in any situation, if it's taxable income, we strongly recommend that people declare it on their tax return and abide by the law.
Here's a question a lot of folks in our state have. We don't have an income tax, a state income tax, which you can deduct from your federal tax, but we do have the sales tax. Can we still write off our sales taxes, Richard?
Yes, sales tax is still deductible. That was something that Congress extended in the late-breaking legislation that came about at the end of the year and the first part of this year. So again, on Schedule A, if you're itemizing your deductions, you can claim that sales tax.
How do you decide whether or not to do the long form or the easy form? How do you kind of go through that calculation in your head, whether it's worthwhile to itemize all those deductions and do all that extra paperwork?
Well, it's really a matter of what you want to do to result in the best outcome for you. The tax return, the tax comes out the same way, whether you are filing a 1040EZ or a Form 1040. Anyone can file the long form, the Form 1040, because it accounts for every possible kind of income and forms and schedules that you attach. So you really want to use the easiest form that is available for you. But more importantly, I would urge people to use tax preparation software and file their returns electronically because the software does that hard job for you.
Joanne has another question about the sales tax. She asks about itemizing it. She says, is any portion of the taxes paid at the pump on gasoline considered to be a sales tax? And if so, what percentage? That's the first part of her question. Can you deduct that part of what you pay in gasoline tax from your federal taxes?
Well, I think what will happen is that when you, especially as Richard had mentioned, when you work through software, electronic software, it will help you identify those credits and deductions that you may be eligible for. And one of the questions that it asks you is if you live in a state such as Washington, where you can deduct the sales, both the state and local sales tax. But what you essentially do when you do that software is basically state the rate of the sales tax. It doesn't go into the various categories of items in terms of, you know, you can take it off for this item or you can take it off for that item. It's basically asking what's the rate of that state, and then it does a calculation for you based upon your income and other factors that it's going to consider.
So I guess the question is the gas tax considered a sales tax for the purposes of this deduction? What do you think, Richard?
Well, what I would have to take a look at, and yes, I'm a resident of the state of Washington and I buy gasoline. I frankly don't know what the various tax components are added to the price of the gasoline itself. You'd have to get a specific breakdown. And certainly in any receipt that I've ever received, it hasn't shown me what that is.
Yeah.
So as part of due diligence as a taxpayer, if I am going to take my specific amount of sales tax that I actually paid during the year, I'd have to have a record that shows what that is. So it would be the job of the taxpayer, myself if I were going to do this, to find out how much of that price per gallon is the sales tax.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that would apply to this next question. Joanne asks, what portion of street parking, city metered parking, is considered sales tax, if any? Why is it not itemized on the receipt if it is part of that? So I guess she'd have to figure out somewhere how much of that she's paying in for parking on city streets is sales tax, and then she could deduct that?
If there is a component of sales tax in that parking fee, then yes, they could. That would be part of calculating your actual sales tax expense. What David was pointing out earlier was that when you use the software, you go through the process, and it, based on your income range, it totals an amount of sales tax that you're considered to have paid. So that's an easier way to go about it. Or you can actually
go through
it
one thing at a time, write down
receipt.
Every single thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We've got Tim on the line from Wallingford. If you just tuned in, we've got with us Richard Panik and David Tucker. They're from the Internal Revenue Service, and they decided to take some time out to come here and answer your questions. Tim in Wallingford, thank you so much for taking the time to give us a call. What's your question, Tim?
Oh, my question is about foreign taxes paid. I lived in New Zealand for a year and made some investments down there. So for several years now, I've been paying taxes on income in New Zealand, and when I paid my federal taxes, it was a credit, but something changed here a couple of years ago, and I couldn't quite figure out what to do. Last year, it looked like I could take it as a deduction, but it wasn't a credit anymore. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
That's a real complicated area of tax law. My best suggestion is to take a look online again at irs.gov. The form that you're going to be looking at is the Form 1116, which is a foreign tax credit. And you have to take a look and see what your specific situation is and whether it's and where any credit for the foreign tax that you paid is going to appear on your tax return.
And one thing I would add is that all of our forms are on our website, so that you can print them out from the website, but also even more importantly sometimes are the instructions for those forms. And in those instructions, it gives you a lot of guidance as to what is on those forms, but also how to apply those forms. So I would look at those instructions as well when you're looking at those forms on our website.
206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. If you've got a question for the IRS, 800-289-5869. Write to us, conversation@kuow.org. David, what are some of the most common mistakes people make on their tax forms? If they're going through them now, what should they have as a checklist to go back and double check and make sure they get right?
Well, one thing I would consider them to look at is, first of all, make sure you file your taxes on time, which is April 15th this year, which just falls on a Monday. That's the first thing. And the second is that, you know, there are things that the taxpayer should be aware of. Like, they need to make sure that they have the correct their correct Social Security number on their return, as well as also making sure that they've got the correct spelling of any dependents that they may be claiming. Make sure those things match the dependent's name with what's on that dependent's Social Security card number. And also, sometimes we see math errors or computation errors. We find that with electronic filing that you have a less than 1% error rate, whereas with paper returns, it's around 20. And so that's why you've heard us advocate very strongly to do electronic filing, because it removes all those math computation errors. And the other thing is that if you're going to do electronic filing, one thing we suggest is doing to get your return that much quicker is to do direct deposit. Now, in doing that direct deposit, make sure that you're putting the correct bank account. We really want to make sure that's the correct bank number, because you want that money to flow into the account that you're designating. So those are the things beyond also remembering to sign and date your return when you submit it.
Richard Panik, what are the chances that I'm going to get audited?
Well, you know, there's no real numbers out there that I'd be able to share with you. But if you are audited, or any of us are audited, the important thing to remember is keep good records. So if you keep good records for the preparation of the return, you have those records available to you for the tax examiner, whether you're going into the office or the revenue agent is coming out to see you. Good records are the foundation of a good return, and a good return is going to withstand the audit.
Christy's on the line on Capitol Hill, and she's got a question about taxes and marriage. Christy, what's your question?
Hi, yeah. My partner and I are considering getting married soon, and we both make our salaries are in the mid-$50,000 range, and he also makes about $3,000 a year in contract work. And I was just wondering, what's the best way to go about it? Filing jointly, filing separately, not getting married at all, staying single. Are there any specific benefits or deficits?
Should Christy get married? That's what she wants to know.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables in there that we really don't know about or want to consider.
It's a tax issue. Should Christy get married? What do you think?
Well, I don't want to weigh in on whether you should get married, but I would say that in terms of from a financial standpoint, you're probably going to see benefits in being in a married status that you'll gain because of the different deduction stuff that you'll be eligible for. So I would look at, I mean, that's certainly from a financial standpoint one consideration, but it also depends on, this is where we often say general. It depends on your general situation or, you know, your individual situation that we can't really address in terms of what other deductions you may have, what are all the different sources of income, and whether you have children or not already, you know, or in the future, you know, those are all things that you want to kind of consider. But I would say if you want to get married, then don't do it from a financial standpoint. Just do it.
Jesse writes to us. He says, is it still possible to contribute to a Roth IRA for 2012? Richard?
There are still opportunities to contribute to IRAs before the due date of the return. What you have to be careful of is when you go to the administrator of that IRA or any of that plan, that you tell them very clearly that this is a 2012 contribution. because if it goes in as a 2013 contribution and you subsequently make a 2013 contribution, you could be in the position where you have made an excess contribution, and that can cause you unnecessary complications. So yes, you can. Make sure you designate it.
You know, I just heard a story today about they're taking a look at the possibility of the IRS sending us our tax forms all filled out. I mean, you would take the information you get from W-2 forms, forms that are filed with the federal government, and give us something that we could look at and just sign and send back without having to do the calculations. The report said that people at the IRS are a little kind of worried about the extra work that would take. What's your thought on that, whether it would be easier for you to take the data that you have about our finances that's reported to you and send us the tax returns filled out for us to peruse? What do you think about that?
Well, I would be hesitant to kind of speculate on what future proposals there may be.
Sure.
We do know that when things are electronically transferred information back and forth, it does expedite the process, and it also does reduce to a degree, manpower. It just depends on, though, when we say that we're going to that kind of process, it depends on how there's so many variables in terms of how that information is inputted, how it's transferred. You know, there's a lot of variables there if you're talking from a cost-saving standpoint that we can't really offer conjecture on, because I don't know what the requirements are going to be on both sides of the fence. But we I think, strongly advocate, electronic information. That's something that does help overall with expediting the process.
Well, a couple of takeaways I've gotten out of this. There are a lot of variables. Okay. File electronically.
Yes.
Double check the information, particularly your Social Security number. Richard Panik and David Tucker from the Internal Revenue Service, thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Ross.
From KUOW, I'm Ross Reynolds.